Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, the 15th of February, 2015. This is episode 1162. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at freshbooks.com/techguy. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 50-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidate fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about, well, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. Yeah, Chris Marquardt's back, our camera guy. Smartphones, too. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you'd like to talk high tech, I'm here to do it with you. We're here covering what President Obama called the Wild West. I think it's a little more settled than that, isn't it? Well, maybe not. Maybe he was at a cyber summit in the Silicon Valley this weekend. Actually, was there on Friday, and meeting with all of the big tech executives, saying we all got to get together and protect ourselves against the Wild West. Yeehaw! Actually, maybe it is the Wild West. You read about the hackers who have robbed U.S. and global banks of hundreds of millions of dollars. Kaspersky Labs, which is a antivirus research and security company, pretty well known and certainly reliable, and they provided a report to the New York Times that more than 100 banks in 30 nations have been hacked, in many cases by malware, you know, the standard stuff you get in your email every day, and phishing scams. And for a total of $300 million, it started with a bank in the Ukraine. Kaspersky's in Russia. And a bank in 2013, an ATM in Kiev, started giving out cash just randomly. Random times a day, it would just go, here's 100. Without a card or anybody in front of it or anything. Cameras showed that just piles of money would spit out of the machine, and then somebody would just conveniently happen to be there, walk by, and pick it up. So the bank called Kaspersky in and said, What's going on? Turned out the bank's internal computers had been penetrated by malware that allowed cyber criminals to watch employees with their daily transfers. The software literally had been installed for months, sending back video feeds and images that told the criminals who were in Russia, China, and Europe how the bank conducted its daily routines. Then the group impersonated. This isn't amazing. This would be a movie. This is like Ocean's 13. Then the group impersonated bank officers and not only turned on various cash machines, but transferred millions of dollars from banks in Russia, Japan, Switzerland, the United States into dummy accounts set up in other countries. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. More than 100 banks and other financial institutions in 30 nations. It is the largest, probably the largest bank heist ever. And because Kaspersky was hired and had signed non-disclosure agreements, they can't say which banks. Officials in the White House and the FBI, according to the New York Times, have been briefed. But they They say it'll take time to confirm the losses. You know, banks, this happens. It's my strong impression, and I remember talking to Secret Service agents 10 years ago. And even then, they said, oh, this happens all the time. But banks don't want you to lose confidence. Why do banks build? I don't know if they do it anymore. They used to. Now they're in the mall. But in the good old days, the bank would build a giant palace, right, with columns, stone, a big old safe. So you'd feel like, oh, my money's safe in there. You know, banks, for a bank to work, takes some faith on the part of its depositors. Because the truth is, they don't have the money. They lend it out. They do all sorts of stuff with it. And the last thing a bank wants is for its depositors to not trust it and come and say, hey, give me my money. So they have not any incentive at all to tell you that they have been hacked. And, of course, they cover it up and they take the loss. I guess they pass it on to you in fees and so forth. You know, I mean, we end up paying for it, of course. But they would rather take the loss and keep it secret than let anybody know. So it's interesting that we're getting this information from Kaspersky Labs, $300 million in thefts. And I guess my point is it's probably just one of many things like this. No bank has come forward acknowledging the theft. In fact, when President Obama was at this cybersecurity and consumer protection summit at Stanford with all the tech execs on Friday, he said, we got to pass a law that makes the banks disclose this. He urged passage of a law that would require public disclosure of any breach that compromised personal or financial information. But the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Center, which is a consortium that alerts banks to malicious activity, say our members are aware of this activity. We knew about it. We have disseminated intelligence on this attack to the members, and some briefings were also provided by law enforcement entities. The banks are going, zip it, zip. We don't want anybody to know. The American Bankers Association declined to comment. Of course they did. Banks don't want to admit that these things are happening and that they happen all the time. I think, and this is what the Secret Service guy told me 10 years ago, they happen all the time. They know it. They just cover the tracks and keep on working. The question remains, writes the New York Times, how a fraud of this scale could have proceeded for 2 years without banks, regulators, or law enforcement catching on. So how did it happen? The same way it would happen to you or me. The cyber criminals sent what we call spear phishing attacks, targeted infected emails to bank employees, a news clip or a message that appeared to come from a colleague as bait. When the employees clicked on the email, they downloaded malicious code, and of course the hackers were in. Now, it begs the question, I would hope we have here in my little business with only 25 employees protections against that kind of thing. Why doesn't a bank? What? You're telling me that a bank email can come from the outside into the bank and that a bank employee can open the email and infect the systems in the bank without detection? You're telling me that's your security system? Then the thieves installed something that you might have heard of called a RAT, a remote access tool. We've heard of rats being used against people, often attractive young women, so that the perpetrators can turn on the cameras and see what's going on. And that's why a lot of people put tape over their camera now on their computer, or could get a screen grab of what's going on. And that way, they learned everything about the bank's operations. They could look like a regular employee, do all the right things, have all the passwords. This is probably what happened at Sony Pictures Entertainment, too. I think most people think that the attack on Sony began last May when there was a breach, which Sony declined to report and said, it's fine, no problem, we got this. And I think that's when the bad guys got into Sony, and they sat there for months observing, getting passwords, getting file names, getting folder names, knowing exactly what to do so that when they wanted to drain, in this case, not money from a bank, but information from a motion picture company, they could do it. without anybody getting in the way. Happens all the time. So don't feel bad if you, because we get a calls every day, every show. Somebody says, oh, I've been bit by malware. Well, happens to the best of us, apparently. And you probably have less to lose than a multinational bank. I don't know if disclosure is going to help. It's certainly going to embarrass the banks. I guess the theory is if we know about this stuff, we can all do better. Let's talk in 5 years. All right, we're going to take your calls. I'll talk in 5 minutes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hammond is here, the phone ranger. Hello, phone ranger.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good. Did you hear this? That Apple is working on a... This is so bogus. I don't even like to repeat this. This is a story in the Wall Street Journal from Reuters quoting one. I give you one unnamed anonymous source who said, yeah, Apple's making a self-driving car. Huh? We figured it out, though. It's really all about user interface. And it won't have pedals. It won't have a steering wheel, no clutch, no gears. It's all with your hands. So wax on to turn left, wax off to turn right. You push your hand forward to go forward. You pull it back to brake. That's perfect.
So you are telling it to drive somewhat.
Yeah, somewhat.
Okay.
And then if you get an accident and you call Apple, they'll just say, well, you're driving it wrong. Uh-huh. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm. It's the Tinder date of cars.
It's the swipe left, right. Swipe right. Heather, you've been, I believe, on the phone for the last few minutes, and it's not recreational. This is work for you.
Right.
You've been lining up phone calls for me.
I am not flirting. I might have flirted a little bit with some of the callers.
Go ahead. Flirt with the callers.
Because
that makes them... Now I understand why when guys come on, they go, I love Heather. She's greatest. She's the greatest call screener ever. Now I understand. You're juicing them up a little bit. You're getting them excited.
Maybe.
You know what? Makes for a better caller. It's fine with me.
Okay, good. So, yeah, Ryder in Manhattan Beach is making my heart go pitter-pat.
Oh, hello, Ryder. Thank you, Heather. What's
hello.
Up? Hello.
So, I've been saving up my money for a while for a laptop to play these three games called Terraria. You've probably heard of this one. Minecraft.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And eventually, I want to play the Oculus Rift when the consumer...
Sure, who wouldn't?
And I'll need free tech support because my mom, my parents, we're more of an Apple family, but I want a PC so I can play.
Oh, you're breaking their heart. It's like they raised you a Democrat and all of a sudden you said, I'm voting Republican.
So,
you don't know the half of it.
Oh, that's mom in the background, isn't it, Ryder?
Yep.
You're breaking their heart.
I also want... What?
How old are you, Ryder?
I'm 8. I mean, 9.
9?
Saying 9.
And you've been saving up your money and stuff, and how much do you have to spend?
$600 to $700.
Jiminy Christmas. Okay. And I guess mom and dad, there's nothing they can do about that. They're just, you know, they want you to buy an iPad, but no.
No, I have an iPad mini.
Oh, so you don't need that.
Helping me get the PC.
Yeah. Well, it's true. For Minecraft, you could play Minecraft on a Mac, but for Terraria, yeah, that's a PC. Oculus Rift, you're a little premature on that one. I wouldn't worry too much about the Oculus Rift. It's very early days yet.
I know, but still, really.
In fact, it would cost you $600 just to get the Oculus Rift, so.
I've heard it's, going to be $350 to $500.
Yeah, we don't know, and we don't know when it's going to be. I have one. I bought it when they did a Kickstarter. Those who are not as hep as Ryder, it's a virtual reality goggles that you put on. You do need to attach it to a computer, and then you can look up and down, left and right, and eventually you'll be able to play a game. Have you ever tried them before, Ryder?
I haven't tried Oculus Rift, but I have tried the Samsung Gear VR, which is powered by Oculus Rift.
Yeah, that's interesting because you take a Galaxy Note 4 and you slot it into some inexpensive... basically holder, and it's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think you would, after a couple of days, you think you'd still use it?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. You know, I think actually Microsoft is doing something that may appear before the Oculus Rift, believe it or not. They say this fall, called the HoloLens. Have you seen that?
Yeah, but it's AR.
Oh, yeah. And you want VR.
I want VR.
Well, here's why I like AR. Especially for, by the way, Microsoft, which owns Minecraft, showed this with Minecraft, is you can still see mom and dad. You can still see your Cheerios. But while you're having breakfast, you can also be building in Minecraft. Pretty cool, huh?
Wait, so you can play like Minecraft and Terraria and things like that on?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But you're still, unlike Oculus Rift where you can't see anything, so your little brother could sneak up on you and smack you on the back of the head. You don't want that.
I don't have a little brother or a little sister.
Yeah, well, don't be so sure of that. I think mom and dad want another Apple user in the family. So just, I would play that part down. Mom's blushing now. So I'm just teasing you. You know me. I'm just a tease. If you had a little brother or sister, I would be it. And I would smack you on the back of the head if you had an Oculus Rift. But see, when you're wearing the HoloLens, you can see him coming. Or your friend or your buddy or whatever. And so, yes, you can play Minecraft. And it looks like Minecraft, like you're building a castle. And it looks like it's right in front of you. But if you look left, you could still see the room you're in. If you look right, one of the things you can do is you can bend over with a HoloLens, look through the window in the castle, and see the room inside.
Cool.
Yeah. It's really cool. Here's what you should do is just Google HoloLens Microsoft, and they have a nice video demo, and you can see how it would be used. I am excited. I understand your interest in the Oculus Rift, and it is a different kind of thing because it's virtual reality that kind of takes over your reality. But I think augmented reality may end up being something even cooler. Nevertheless, the nice thing about this, if you buy a PC today, Microsoft has already said free upgrade this fall to Windows 10. Which is a requirement for the HoloLens. The HoloLens actually is a Windows 10 computer.
Wait, so all Windows 8.1 computers are a free upgrade?
Yep.
All of them?
Yep. And all Windows 7 computers. Yep.
So what should I buy? I want.
Mom's whispering in his ear. Okay.
I want one that has. From a place that has free tech support, like Costco.
You don't need tech support. You're smarter than the kid at Costco. You're going to call. I know what you're saying. Mom and Dad are Mac people, so they're not going to understand you. They just don't understand.
Mom needs tech support to keep up with this one.
Yeah, you
need it.
Mom, Ryder is going to be tech supporting you. I don't think you need to worry about this so much.
My dad, of course, really won't. Because he's just, like, barbecuing right now.
Yeah, that's what dads do. They like fire. Dad goes, fire, good. Make steak. You play computer. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm a dad. I know that. So, I think, let's see, your price range is about right. There are lots of good choices. Did you think, Ryder, whether you want a desktop or a laptop?
Definitely a laptop.
Definitely.
Something I can bring to my friend's house and still have time to play with them.
Yeah. Well, the best PC laptop out right now, and I'm telling you, I have one and I am crazy about it, starts at $800, I'm sorry to say. But maybe Mom and Dad could kick in a little bit and help you out on this. Hang on, I'll tell you about it. In fact, it's going to make Mom and Dad jealous because it's like even better than a MacBook Air. It's like the coolest thing ever. But we'll tell you right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Gazelle. I love Gazelle, and I've told you about Gazelle before. It's the place to go when you have old gadgets. And, you know, if they're just gathering dust in the drawer there, you might want to go to Gazelle and get some cash for them. I mean, you wouldn't leave a $100 bill in your drawer just to gather dust. Well, that's kind of what you're doing, leaving that gadget. Many of them worth lots more than $100. Gazelle will buy iPhones, cell phones of all kinds, including BlackBerries, Samsung, Motorola, Nokia phones. They'll buy your old iPads, broken or not, by the way. Obviously, you're not going to get as much money for a broken one, but they will buy a broken one. Also, Amazon Fire tablets, Asus tablets, Google, the Nexus tablets, Microsoft Surfaces, Samsungs, iPods, Apple computers, too. And they give you top dollar, plus your quote is good for 30 days. So you don't even have to just get the quote now. You don't even have to decide to buy. You may wonder, well, what happens to those? Well, some of them they sell on eBay, but the very best, they save for themselves and they sell on Gazelle.com. This is something new. Gazelle certified pre-owned devices. They have two different conditions, certified like new. They are basically new devices. Somebody opened it, didn't want it, sold it back to Gazelle. And then certified good, which will show a little gentle signs of wear. But they're certified. All devices go through a rigorous 30-point inspection to make sure they're fully functional, backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. And the price is right. So if you lose your phone or break your phone, you can get a great replacement at Gazelle.com. Sell or buy at Gazelle. They've paid out over $200 million now to over a million customers. Great satisfaction. The shipping is free. The processing is fast. I love it. Gazelle.com. Sell your gadgets the fast and simple way with Gazelle. Do you have a diamond sword, Reiner?
What?
Do you have a diamond sword yet?
I don't really play survival.
Ah. You like to build stuff.
Yeah, but the hunger really annoys me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You got to go out, get food. Boring.
I know.
We call that grinding, when you have to kind of do a lot of stuff that doesn't really get you much. It's grinding. So you build stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Neat.
I usually use mods and mod packs, but
sure.
The mods and mod packs are... They're crashing the computer.
Yeah, they're not very reliable because they're not written. See, this is why, Ryder, you need to learn how to program computers so that you can write reliable mods.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are learning coding, are you? Do you do any of that?
We do that at school.
Good.
A lot.
That's one of the things the president said on Friday. He actually did an interview with Kara Swisher, my friend Kara at Recode, and he said that it's like reading, writing, arithmetic. In fact, it's really part of arithmetic now. People should learn the logic of computer programming as part of their education. I think you're in, what grade are you in?
I'm in third.
Wow, and you're learning coding. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That is really great. We've been trying that. I mean, people of a certain age remember logo and turtle graphics, and you put the pen down, and you turn left, and you go three steps and stuff. So there's a program I'm going to recommend. Mom, listen up. It's for your iPad called Tinker, T-Y-N-K-E-R.
Yeah.
Great program for teaching coding to kids Ryder's age. And actually, it'd be good for you, Heather, too. Anybody, any age. I love Tinker. It's really fun, but it actually gets you pretty far down the road on that. I would say, Ryder, well, okay, so... If mom and dad are willing to kick in a little bit, I think the Dell XPS 13, the new 13-inch Dell, is beautiful. It might even make an Apple user kind of jealous. It did me. It did me because it's kind of – and I think the next MacBook Air will look a lot like it. It's a beautiful small – it's as big as a 11-inch MacBook Air, which is about as small a laptop as you can get, but – It has a 13-inch screen. Now, there's something else. If mom and dad want to save a little money and you want to save a little money and maybe save up for that Oculus Rift, that's actually really good and probably for a third grader be perfect. This is from HP. It's a Windows 8.1 computer. It's called the Stream. And they have 11-inch, they have 12-inch, 13-inch. I'm holding up the 13-inch, I think, or 12-inch. Of course, you're watching on the radio, so you have no idea what I'm holding up. But... Mom will like this, and you will like it because you're on a budget. This is about $200, $200 to $300, depending on the size of the screen and so forth. It is a perfect computer, I think, for your first laptop.
Cool.
Yeah, and you'll save some. And I would keep saving the money because, you know, the Rift and the HoloLens and all of that. But this is a Windows 8.1 machine. It comes with Office, a free year of Microsoft Office. I don't know if you really do you do much spreadsheeting, but maybe he does. I shouldn't laugh. But I think the HP Stream is really surprisingly good for the price. So
I think I'll get the XPS though because it sounds pretty amazing.
It's really amazing, but it's $800.
I don't want something that is good. I want something that's awesome.
Awesome. Ryder, you're a man after my own heart. Well, mom and dad will kick in a little bit. That one would get you through eighth grade. Those are nice systems. They're very well made. They're touch. You can get touchscreen or not. I don't think you need the touchscreen. But look at the, you know, when you go to the store, look at the HP Stream as well. Because for a budget computer, that is pretty amazing. At $200, the one I'm holding was $229. It's unbelievable. And I think they're very decent. So, but the XPS 13 is, in my opinion, the best Windows laptop out on the market right now. So if you want the best.
I think I'll go for that.
Okay. Mom, you've got some work to do here, but I can see that you have a very, very smart young man. Dell does have good tech support if you're willing to pay for it. I don't think you're going to need it. I really don't. But if you're willing to pay for it. But some of the basics, because Mom and Dad don't know Windows, I think, frankly, Ryder, you're going to be able to figure out most of it. But some of the basics, you can go online. There's some great books out there as well. I would just pick up a book about Windows 8.1.
I have this program called VMware, and it lets me, like, play Windows, like, software.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I use that, too.
So it really helped me learn about it, and I haven't even had a class, but already I'm pretty good.
I figure you would be. You know, you can join the Microsoft Insider program and get a copy of Windows 10 for free that you can run in VMware on your Mac. That's what I do for Windows 10. And at least see what the next version. I think the next version of Windows is going to be killer. It's going to be really good. And boy, when that HoloLens, Microsoft says they've been working on this for 5 years. No one's heard a word about it. You've heard everything about the Oculus Rift, still can't buy it. Everything about the Samsung VR, you still can't buy. But Microsoft says not only have we been working on this in secret for 5 years, we're going to sell it to you in the fall. Now, I don't know how much it'll be. It's not going to be $200, I don't think. I think it's going to be closer to 1,000. But you can start saving now. Do you have a paper route?
No.
I'm just teasing. Your mom and dad are great. They support you in this, don't they?
What'd you say?
They support you in you. They encourage you to do this, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Isn't that great? And you're obviously very smart. And I think that this is a wonderful way for you to expand. I mean, the sky's the limit. Once you understand technology, the future is yours. So I for one, look forward to living in a future where Ryder is running things. Okay, Ryder? Keep up the good work.
Okay.
All right. If I were Ryder's parents, I'd be glowing. What a smart third grader. I wish to heck that my son and daughter had any interest at all in technology. I mean, here's an example of kids. And this is probably the case. They're surrounded by technology. Any computer they wanted, anything they want. They want an Oculus Rift? Dad's got one. They want, I mean, and no interest. None at all. Nope. I guess it's always that way, isn't it? Mom and Dad are Apple users. Ryder's going to be a Windows user. That's how it happens, isn't it? It's like family ties, right? Jamie in... on the Penn Turnpike? Okay, Jamie. Drive carefully. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I am well. How are you?
All right. Well, at least we're not snowing. We were blowing some pretty good snow here last night, but
holy cow,
cleaned up.
My mom's in Rhode Island, and I think that that's not the case in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. It's still snowing, and it's a mess.
Yeah, send her a shovel. Probably needs it.
I'm sending her my nephew's. With a snowblower is what I'm sending her.
That'll work. There you go.
What can I do for you?
Well, Leo, I'm looking for a laptop, but I'm a little more upscale than your previous caller. I'm a truck driver, and this is going to be my main computer. So I need a bit of power. I'm not what I would call a hardcore gamer, but. Yeah, about the most taxing thing I do is World of Warcraft, but I want it to be able to something that'll last at least a few years. So I'm probably looking at something with a graphics, a separate graphics chip in it.
Yeah.
And
World of Warcraft doesn't demand that. I'll tell you, here's the deal: to get to future proof, you're future proofing. You're saying I want to get something that's going to last for a few years. Start with the fifth generation Intel processors, which just came out. I presume you're looking at a laptop. You're not going to drive around with a desktop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a laptop. Yeah, probably a 15 or 17 inch screen.
Okay,
I'd like to have something that's like 1920 would be great.
And battery life is not important to you because you can keep it plugged in, right?
It will be plugged in all the time. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Again, we have to take a break. We'll talk about recommendations for what we would call a desktop replacement laptop when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88 Ask Leo. We've been talking to Jamie, who's sliding down the Pennsylvania Turnpike. What do you have in the back there, Jamie?
Oh, I'm pulling for one of the big red big box stores. You know, the one with the circular logo.
I know which one you're talking about.
Uh huh.
He's got a little bullseye on his back.
That's it.
So, you know, every trucker I talk to has a pretty nice, pretty sweet setup if you're doing long haul, because your computer can do so much for you. And all the truck stops have internet, and everywhere you'd be would have internet access, although 3G and 4G access in a lot of cases is probably better these days.
Generally is at a truck stop, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many people using it, and the truck stops haven't really updated, so they have a limited amount of bandwidth. You don't need so the Dell XPS 13 that I was recommending to Ryder is nice because it's so compact. It's only 2.6 pounds. It's really a small computer. You don't care about that because it's always plugged in. You don't care about battery life. You're not carrying it around. I mean, maybe minimally, but not a lot. You're not putting it in your backpack or anything. So you could get what we call a desktop replacement. And the best desktop replacements, in my opinion, are sold by Lenovo. Now, you said you do a little gaming, so.
Right.
For gaming, you might want to go to some. Lenovo's a business computer.
Right.
So I love their. I think they're. You know, they have workstation class computers, which really do a great job, and they're built like tanks. These are the old ThinkPads. In fact, they still brand them ThinkPad, the old IBM ThinkPads.
Right.
So I recommend these a lot to people who want workstation, you know, desktop replacement. They're 5-6 pounds. They have lots of USB ports. They have Ethernet. They have all sorts of stuff. And you can get them with the latest processors. You can get i7s. You can, you know, I mean, these are, and they're big screens and all of that stuff. Gaming, though, you said something. I think you're probably right. You want what's called discrete graphics. That is, most business laptops will not have a separate graphics processor. This one, the one I'm looking at, actually has an NVIDIA Quadro, which is a pretty good graphics processor. And that's Lenovo. This is the W550. It starts at $1,259, and is a pretty robust, has good sound and everything. You can it has noise canceling dual HD microphones, so you could probably actually, without a headset, use this while you're driving down the road. These are pretty robust systems. For gamers, often I recommend Alienware, which is a Dell gaming brand. They make higher end laptops they're more expensive because there's a lot of styling involved, but they have higher end graphics processors as well. This one in the Lenovo is not bad, I have to say.
I was looking at the Lenovo Y50 and Y70s.
Yeah.
They're gaming.
Yeah.
Systems.
Yeah, I think Lenovo you're going to be very happy with. They're a little more they're a little more pricey, but they're going to give you even better gaming performance. Actually, I guess they're not. They start at 1000. So they're not.
I've seen the base Y50 at around $800
online. That's pretty amazing.
But,
yeah, and these have NVIDIA GeForce cards. Those are more of the gaming graphics cards. I would strongly recommend that. One of the reasons I like Lenovo is they're really pretty tough.
Right, and that's what we need.
You bet.
Truck, everything breaks.
I would look at getting SSDs. I don't know.
Absolutely.
You don't want to be joggling around a spinning hard drive. Any moving parts, bad idea.
Right.
And SSDs really speed things up.
Right. Yeah, the internal would definitely be an SSD. Yeah, if I need a bulk drive for, you know, watching, you know, videos and such, yeah, I'll have an external.
I think the Y50 is an excellent choice.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Enjoy it. Drive safely.
Thank you. 7-3s, Leo.
He's a ham, too. 7-3. Take care. What's your call sign, Jamie?
November 3, Echo Oscar Papa.
November 3, Echo Oscar Papa. And I'm Whiskey 6, Tango Whiskey Tango. Good to talk to you.
Yep. Talk
7-3.
To you. Thank you, Leo.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
John in Austin, Texas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Love the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Just had a quick question. Last year, went to the UK, got a inverter at one of the stores, and our converter, it almost blew up my laptop. wondering.
Most laptops do not need inverters because laptops are made for a global market. So you can look, if you look on the brick, it'll say 120 to 240. So most of the time, all you really need is a plug converter.
Yes, that's what I meant. My apologies.
You don't need a transformer because the power is fine. It can take the voltage.
So what do you recommend for traveling like I'm going to be going to Spain this year and just a plug in there so I don't find a lot.
You can get it at the airport. Brookstone sells them. A lot of people sell them. Just a travel adapter. You do not need a converter. So the point here, folks, is that in the U.S., most power is 110 volts nominally. But you travel overseas, it could be as much as 220 to 240 volts. And you don't want to plug in an American appliance into 240 volts or you're going to see quite a spectacular little display of fireworks in the bathroom. But the good news is, in most cases, certainly with all laptops, but you check the brick, and many electronics devices, if you look, it'll say 110 to 240. It'll handle the voltage just fine. Sometimes there's a switch, usually not. The only thing you need is an adapter because the plugs in Spain don't look like the plugs in the U.S. And it's not, there's no electronics in it. It's just a different, it's an adapter. So there's not like one better than the other. They're all the same. I don't think you're gonna have any issues at all. I have blown out power in many a country, by attempting to plug in 110 volt devices into 220s. So I have learned my lesson. Last year we went on a trip. We started, let's see, how many places did I blow out? We started in Venice in a hotel that was made out of a 1,000-year-old monastery. So I figured the power wasn't real good. Plugged in, the whole room went dark. I had to call the engineer, and he said, oh, okay. And then we got on the boat. It was a cruise. Same thing. I had to call the engineer. He said, oh, okay. So I threw that device out because I think that was a 110-only device. You're not going to – you might short things out because you're unusual, but I don't think you're going to cause any major problems. Don't recommend it. Let's put it that way. But a simple adapter is fine. In Spain, I can't remember which one they use. I think they use the – there's just kind of a standard year. England's very different. It's got a weird-looking squarish thing. I think in Italy, Spain, France – they're all the same. It's kind of a rounded dual plug. If you can get a ground, do. But a lot of times the older plugs don't have grounds.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I don't think it's going to be a big hassle. But always, this is my mistake. See, I assumed, I'm sure it's electronic. It was a battery charger, I think. I can't remember what it was. But I think it was for a camera. I just assumed, this is going to handle 220, no problem. Always look. It's in the fine print. You might need a magnifying glass, but it's on every device. You'll see it in very fine print, the voltage it can handle. And maybe you'll need a magnifying glass to read it. I'm looking at one here. This is a OnePlus One USB charger, even that. And it says 110 to 240. You want to make sure of that. And then you'll have to get a little bit of a physical adapter to marry the plugs. Ground is a little bit different. Yeah, Spain. Surf's telling me Spain uses the standard European two round plugs. You can get an adapter that will do all of them, or you can get an adapter kit. Many laptops, in fact, Apple does this very nicely. Apple has an international kit that will you just snap on, and you can snap any plug onto it, and it makes it just like it's. And that's all you need to do. So, not a big deal. The Euro plug, it's called. Is it really? Are you pranking me? Is it? That's what it's called? Debbie Calabasas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
I have a ancient Windows 2008, originally Vista. I upgraded it to in 2009 to the Windows 7.
Good.
And yes, and that was much better.
Yeah, you're pretty modern.
Yes, exactly. And I did like what you talked about, getting a new laptop work station replacement.
Yeah.
But I was going to wait, I thought, until fall when they came out with...
No, you don't have to.
Okay, that's
you
what I...
You don't have to. Microsoft really wants everybody to go to Windows 10. And you know what? Anybody who's gone to Windows 8 is probably also saying, I can't wait till Windows 10. Windows 10 is to Windows 8 what Windows 7 was to Vista. Okay. It is. It polishes it up. It fixes it up. But any machine that can run Windows 7 or Windows 8 is going to be completely capable of running Windows 10. And Microsoft has promised for people running Windows 7 or 8 that the Windows 10 upgrade will be free. You will free forever. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, for the first year. I should explain. They said free for the first year, and it's like, well, what does that mean? Do I have to pay after a year? It's not what that means. It means you have a year to upgrade, and it will continue to be free. You will own Windows 10. So no reason to hesitate buying a computer today. Any computer you buy today will have a free upgrade to Windows 10 in the fall. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, Hour 2 of the Tech Guy Show, as we continue our discussion of all things geeky, computers, the internet, home theater. Our camera guy, Chris Marquardt's back. He's going to join us in about half an hour, talk about digital photography, one of my favorite hobbies. This is a great hobby to get into for anybody because it's so accessible now. It used to be, and I when I was a younger fella, had a little black and white dark room, and I would roll my own film, and it was really cool and fun. But it's even if you do it all, and you have to do that to save money, even if you do it all yourself, every shot costs you something. Every picture costs you money. And of course, if you're not doing it all yourself, it's like 50 cents every picture. So you're less likely to shoot stuff. And you're less likely to do what I think really makes a difference, which is take multiple shots of the same thing or many angles or, you know, just play with it a little bit. But digital photography makes it completely changes the cost equation. All the money's up front buying a camera and lenses, and you can spend as little or as much as you want. And then the shots are free. Take thousands a day. It's okay. And I think as a result, you're seeing amazing photography because the real trick to becoming a good photographer is, taking pictures and looking at them and seeing what worked and didn't work and then going out and getting better. And the more you can do of that, the faster you can iterate, the better you'll be. You know, that's the old thing. Malcolm Gladwell says it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert at something. I'm not sure I agree with him, and I think there's research to show that he's wrong. But the idea is kind of there that anybody can be expert at almost anything if you do it enough, if you practice it enough. And practice it mindfully. So instead of just doing it over and over again, look at the pictures you get and say, what worked? What didn't work? Why do I like this one and not that one? Get feedback from your friends. That's another thing the internet's made very easy to do is post your images on Flickr or nowadays Instagram and solicit comments. And people say, I like this one, don't like this one. Even just putting something on Instagram and seeing which ones get the most likes helps you refine your photography. So it's a good time to... I think photography is exploding, becoming really... And the other thing, and my friend Trey Ratcliffe, who's a professional photographer, has said this to me. He said, you know, because of Instagram and Facebook and all of these new social media that encourage sharing images, we've become... we've gone back to, in a way, being a less verbal, more image-focused society. We're all learning to communicate with images and imagery. And that's kind of an old-timey, like thousands, tens of thousands of years ago, way of communicating. And it's an interesting slice. Yeah, maybe we don't communicate as well as we used to, given the acronyms and the texts and so forth. Maybe we can't write as well as we used to, but we've become very adept at expressing ourselves through imagery. Kind of a change in our culture. It's going on. That's why I love this subject of technology, because we're watching everything change before our eyes at a fairly rapid clip. Some of it's good, some of it's not so good, but it's all fascinating. 8888 Ask Leo. Jerry in Corona, you're the next caller. Hi, Jerry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I had a question about iTunes.
Yeah.
Hey, I was on the phone forever with Apple, and they weren't much help, but I got all kinds of duplicated music, and like for example, like one, you know, there'll be like a greatest hits album, and half the songs will be in one location.
Yeah, I hate that. Yeah.
And then I heard yesterday on the show you were talking about Media Monkey, and I looked, but from what I understood, and I could be wrong, was that only for Windows?
It is. It's Windows only. Yeah.
Do you know of an app or anything like a third party type deal I could use to sort through it?
I do. There's actually quite a few. So, because this is a common problem, what's unfortunate is, and this happens on Windows too, when Microsoft puts out a program that comes with Windows, people are less likely to make a competitive program. Same thing with Apple and iTunes. iTunes killed all the third-party music players, music organizers. There were a lot of them. And then Apple comes out with iTunes, and it's like, well, I can't compete with Apple. So in a way, it's kind of a mistake for a company like Microsoft or Apple to come out with a program because it discourages development of in other areas and other arenas. Although iTunes does such a bad job of cleaning up music that there are a number of very good choices that aren't players. They're not designed to do what iTunes does. They're designed to do exactly what you want, which is to find duplicates, to find albums that are broken up across several places, to get album art fixed, because there are databases out there where you can look up an album and get the album art, learn what the tracks are. Some will even rename the tracks. You know, in the days when people downloaded music from Napster, I confess, yeah, we're all raising our hands here, you'd get files that were just kind of randomly named. You know, sometimes somebody would name them with, you know, album, track, artist, title. Sometimes it'd be track, album. It'd be all over the place. So there was a real market, I think, for these cleanup programs. And there are still some. There's one called Tunes Cleaner that you can get in the Mac App Store.
Okay.
I actually, it has pretty good reviews, but there are some negatives. I would read the reviews first, and just understand that any one of these programs runs some risks. So back up your library as is first, then run the program and see what it does. Because sometimes it'll clean up things and sometimes it'll mess them up. Chat room, do you have any recommendations for a good program in on the Mac side? For Media Monkey does do this, and it does, I think, a very good job. Music Brains with a Z, J.C. Calhoun. I remember that one. MusicBrainsWithAZ.org is a good choice, too. There used to be a whole lot more of these. But I think one of the problems with them is you use them once, and then you're kind of done. So there's a couple anyway for you to try. Music Brains with a Z and Tunes Cleaner, which is in the Mac App Store. And let me know, would you? Because I haven't used any of these, and the one that I used way back is gone now. So let me know if you find one that really does the job. And chat room, and anybody listening, one thing you can do, and I encourage everybody to do this, when you hear me talking about something, and we're looking, in this case, for more suggestions for programs that do this, our website is a great place to go. If you can't call in or be in the chat room, go to techguylabs.com anytime. What we do is we take each show, we divide the pages up into show by show, and then hour by hour, then question by question. So the first question in hour two, for this show, for the February 15th show, you'll see right there. In fact, after the fact, like in a couple of days, maybe even tomorrow, we'll have audio and video there so you can see the question or listen to the question, see the text version of the response, but there's also a comment section. And it's very helpful, and people have been doing this. If you comment, if you say, hey, I tried this, it didn't work, I tried this, and it did work, you can even contribute by voting comments up and down. We let you do that too because we want the best responses to appear at the top. That's all free, no sign up needed, no subscription fee. TechGuyLabs.com. Music Brains Picard, which I have used, is, as the chat room's saying, kind of user unfriendly. Picard, named after Jean-Luc Picard of the Starship Enterprise, is cross platform, so it works on Macs and Windows. And it does a lot of this interesting stuff. But because it's open source, it's free. That's good. But it's a little... I mean, the user interface is a little bit lacking. So that's a good one. Music Brains with a Z is the company. MusicBrains.org and Picard, P-I-C-A-R-D, is the program. Riley, here on the line from Boston Spa, New York. Is that really the name?
Yeah, it's two words.
Okay, hold on, Riley. We're going to get to you next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. Oh, my, if you are a freelancer, if you are running a small business or you're the sole proprietor of your own business, you certainly know that the most painful thing in business is getting paid. Sending out the invoice. Not because people don't want to pay you. I don't think that's really the problem. I think it's more that it's just a pain in the butt to make out those invoices, send them out, and just like you, your client has to, you know how it is when you pay bills. It's kind of you put it off. FreshBooks solves the problem by making it easy to invoice and easy to get paid. In fact, on average, FreshBooks customers get paid 5 days faster. That's because it's so easy to pay you. Your FreshBooks invoice includes a button that says, pay me now, and it integrates with Stripe and Fundbox and PayPal. In fact, it integrates with all your apps, Google Apps too, Zen Payrolls, MailChimp. You can accept top credit cards and other online payments. So your clients like this, believe it or not, because they want to make it easy for them too, and you're making it easy for them to pay you. Easy for you to invoice, and easy for you to keep track of things like time and hours. The free FreshBooks apps for iOS and Android will track your hours and automatically input into the invoices. You can also do that with receipts. Just take a picture of the receipt. Get it into the invoice fast for expenses. Plus, it scales with your business. Adding clients, projects, and staff is easy. You'll spend less time on paperwork. In fact, on average, FreshBooks customers free up about 2 days a month to focus on the things they love to do, not invoicing. I want you to try it free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. It makes you look professional, saves you time. It actually makes invoicing fun. I used it for years till I finally, my business grew to the point. In fact, they make an interesting point. FreshBooks customers, on average, double the size of their business in the first 24 months. Kind of happened for me, too. Then I got to the point where I actually had accountants and bookkeepers and financial people, so I didn't have to worry about it anymore. But boy, if you're doing it yourself, this is the way to do it. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. Try it free for 30 days. All I ask when they say, where did you hear about us? I think there's a form. Would you just put the tech guy in there so that we get credit? That's all I ask. FreshBooks, there's the support staff. Great people, too. Really nice. 24/7. Excellent support. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte. Hey, Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number, the website, techguylabs.com. And we're talking to Riley in Boston Spa, New York.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Are you surviving the snow, Riley?
Yeah, we just had 3 to 5 inches this morning, so.
How much total do you have?
I don't even know anymore.
Is it over your head yet?
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Man, I'm jealous. Do you, but you know what? I bet you still have to go to school.
Yeah.
They don't have snow days in Boston Spa, New York.
We had 3 snow days.
Oh, you did? Oh, good.
Yeah, which is the perfect amount, because otherwise, if we had more than that, they'd add on more days to the.
Yeah. Perfect. You just have to work a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
What can I do for you
today? So.
Yeah. What can I do for you today? How old are you? You're older than Ryder was.
Yeah, I'm 12 years old.
12 years old, okay.
But I have a Windows 7 Acer laptop, and it's kind of like saying that I should consider replacing my battery. It's kind of like a check engine light almost. But
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so how long have you had it?
Just a couple days, but I'm just wondering what should I do?
Wait a minute. You've only had the laptop for 2 days, and it's saying fix your battery?
Oh, no, it's been saying that for 2 days.
Oh, how old is the laptop, though?
Like 2-3 years.
Yeah, that's about right. So the way it works is every lithium ion batteries, which is the kind in everything, smartphones, laptops, everything nowadays, they have a fixed number of charge cycles, typically something around 500. That means they can be fully charged and discharged 500 times. If you discharge it halfway and recharge it, that's half a charge. So it's 500 all the way up and all the way down. Now, if you think about it, in 2 years, you probably have done about 500 in 2 or 3 years, haven't you?
Yeah,
it's not every day, but maybe every other day you'd have a full charge and full discharge.
Mm-hmm.
So they, and after 500, which is, as I said, typical, may not be exactly what you've got, but after that fixed number, they don't take a charge anymore. They just stop working pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have software on that Acer that's saying, hey, I can detect that I am not getting, you know, the software watches how long it takes to charge and discharge and how much of a charge the battery could take. And the, what it's telling you now is the battery is not taking much of a charge. It's, you're going to have to replace it pretty soon.
Okay, because the battery still lasts pretty long. When I unplug it, it will last maybe like an hour or so, a lot less than what it usually did. But
yeah, see, that's the beginning of the end. Yeah, that's all. Yeah, that's all it's telling you. You can continue on till it dies.
Okay.
It's, there's no harm done. It's just that you're going to get shorter and shorter battery life. Now, is that Acer? Can you just take open it up and take out the battery, or is it sealed in there?
Yeah, I can take it out.
Okay. So, by the way, you can't do that in most laptops now, which is too bad because that means it's much more expensive to replace a battery. Most batteries, about $90 to replace the battery, and you can order it online. I would, you know, if you don't unplug it a lot, you don't even need to care. In fact, if you get to the point where the battery is no longer charging, on some computers, not all, the computer won't work. But there's an easy fix. You plug it in and you remove the battery. In other words, take the battery out so that it's not in between the power and the computer. And it, you can continue to use the computer forever. Just it has to be plugged in, just like a desktop.
Oh, okay.
So you may not even care. You might say, well, that's how I use it.
Yeah, most of the time I have it plugged in anyway, so that would work.
Yeah, and so by the way, there's a lot of misinformation about how to take care of batteries. Nothing to do on a lithium-ion battery. It doesn't matter. It's got a certain number of charges. Charge it halfway. Charge it all the way. The trick is not to discharge it more than you need to. So the one rule that matters on lithium-ion batteries is keep it plugged in and when you can, because as long as it's plugged in, it's neither discharging or charging. It's not using up any of those cycles.
Okay.
It technically might be discharging a little bit, charging a little bit, discharging. But it's such a small fraction that it's not... It's going to last longer if you keep it plugged in.
Okay. Oh yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I'll definitely take out the battery and see.
Yeah. And just keep it plugged in without the battery, and then you can continue to use it forever.
Okay.
All right, Riley. Thanks for the call.
Okay,
nice to talk to you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Oh yeah. I love watching Twit and everything. I'm a long time listener.
Riley, I love you. Are you going to be a tech guy when you get out of school?
Oh yeah, that'd be fun.
What area are you most interested in?
I think my dream right now is starting a technology, starting a startup, I guess so.
Yeah, well, you know what? Most of the people in your generation, I bet you that's what they do. We're already seeing that. Kids get out of college in the old days, you'd go to a job fair and there'd be Dow Chemical and the Army, and then you'd decide which big company you wanted to work for the rest of your life, so that 50 years down the road you'd get a gold watch. Nowadays, I think more kids, more often than not, don't look at Microsoft, Facebook, and Apple. It's one of the problems these big companies have in Google. They have to really push to recruit these kids, because if you're good and smart, if you're the kind of kid that the big companies want, most of the time you say, I don't need you. I'm going to start my own business, because it's easy. I have a good idea. I could create an app. Cost me almost nothing nowadays. And that's what's really changed, even in just 10 years. I remember when my friend Kevin Rose was starting Dig, which is a very successful startup website. I remember he was so excited because he bought his first server in the colo. It was very expensive, and he had to go get funding, venture capital, very early on, because in order to serve a very popular website, you had to have a lot of bandwidth. You had to have a special colo. You had to have lots of hardware. Nowadays, you just rent it from Amazon or Microsoft or Rackspace or one of 100 companies, and you pay only for what you use. It's very, very cheap. Companies like Facebook, Microsoft, and Apple all offer free development tools and backends, so you don't have to pay a lot of money for that. To start an app company or a software company or a website nowadays, coming out of college, you can afford it out of your pocket. You don't need to sell off 20% of the company to venture capitalists. You can do it on your own and grow it, make it work, then you're going to get a much better deal from the angel investors and the venture capitalists, because they're going to see you've got an audience, you've got a product that works, you're doing great. So that's why a lot of kids, even today coming out of school, if you've got smarts, an idea, and the skills to pursue it, there's no reason to go to work for a big company. Do it yourself. And by the time you get out of school, 8-9 years from now, I think it's going to be even more the case. Sky's the limit. Ryan, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Whoops, let me go to Ryan. Hi, Ryan. How you doing?
Good. I'm good, fine. Hey, I want to say a couple things. Like, hey, will it apply for the Surface to update to the Microsoft 10 thingy? You know, whatever that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, yeah. You have a Surface? You have a Windows 8 Surface?
Yeah, I use it for school.
What you can't use, what you won't be able to do is a Windows Surface RT. If you have a Surface Pro, do you have a Surface Pro?
Nope. It's just a regular Surface 2.
It's a Surface 2. That's all right. It's running Windows 8, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. The upgrade will be free for you. I got to clarify this because Microsoft didn't say it very well. They said for anyone running Windows 7 or 8, you will be able to upgrade free for a year. That means you'll have a window of a year to which you can upgrade to Windows 10 for free. And it'll be free forever after that. So, yes, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's back, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy from his travels around the world. Chris, of course, not only a professional photographer, but a podcaster. His Tips from the Top Floor is one of the best photography podcasts, certainly one of the longest running out there. And he does workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com, and he joins us every week when he's not Where have you been?
Well, not all around the world, just half around the world. I was in Iceland for a week.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Spend a week in the Icelandic winter, which is an amazing place to be when it's cold. I mean, that's where the name comes from, right? Ice. So glacier lagoons, glacier caves, just beautiful. The entire weather, the sea, black lava beaches with blue ice things on them. It was a pretty amazing time we had there.
Where can we see your photography?
Well, if you go to photography.chrismarquardt.com, there's a little gallery with some Iceland pictures. And I've actually just put it online. If you go to discoverthetopfloor.com, there's a little link to a wallpaper pack that I'm actually selling right now.
That's nice of you. Photographers love Iceland. It's so look at the blue glacial ice. It's so gorgeous.
It's just amazing there.
Ice cave? Is that where you were?
That was under a glacier, under tens of thousands of tons of blue ice with ashes embedded in things. So
gorgeous images. Just amazing.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. The blue ice, I'm told by Beef in our chat room, is the oldest ice. It's been compressed, and you can even see the compression lines in it. Yeah. Over hundreds and thousands.
We had in some of those ice things, we had black lava ashes embedded. And when I asked the guide who took us to the cave when this was embedded in the ice, he says, yeah, it's probably from a volcano eruption in 1630.
Wow.
So,
wow. Isn't that amazing? You join us. Chris joins us every week to help us with our photography. I was talking at the beginning of the show about photography and what a great time it is to be a photographer.
Today it's actually assignment time.
Oh, we've got some reviews.
check your email. I have made a choice of three pictures again that try to illustrate the word climate, which is not easy to do. I've seen a lot of pictures that were just about weather, but illustrating climate is really, very, very difficult to do that in a picture. But I think I found three that kind of do a really good job there.
Well, so, I have forwarded your choices over to James DeRuvo, who does our show notes. So if people want to follow along at home, we'll have these images at the Tech Guy Labs site. You can also go to Flickr. Our Tech Guy group has all these submissions. And it looks like you got a goodly number of them, too, this year.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And the first one I chose is by James Aralus, and it's called Ghost Ship. It's a Boeing 747 that's coming into an airport through dense fog.
This is an amazing photograph.
Isn't that amazing? This is like a low-contrast, very mysterious kind of picture, and you see this plane kind of you can literally feel the density of the clouds, how it's slicing
Holy
through them
cow.
And it's in black and white, or maybe it's not in black and white, maybe
that might just be the color
like.
Yeah,
just,
this is incredible. This is an example of I hear this a lot from pros, that to be a good photographer you have to have patience and you have to be able to pre-visualize. So it's pretty clear that he got to this point probably not when this plane was about to fly over, but many minutes or hours before, kind of got a sense that, oh, maybe I'm going to get a great shot of a plane going by here through the fog, and waited until just the right moment to catch the picture. And he did.
You need to be prepared for such a shot,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. He didn't just show up and take that picture.
No.
He had to be able, he had to be patient and be able to pre-visualize it. Nice job, right, James.
The second one is by user March 20, 1989. It's called Vertical Clouds. Hmm. And it's one of these examples of clouds that you don't see that often. This is clouds from the distance being lit from the side by the low, probably evening sun. So you have this depth in these clouds and depth. There's lots of going on behind it, and there's some silhouettes of trees in the foreground. And it's just beautiful. It's just a really beautiful shot. And it's one of these shots that you really have to be lucky. And then you have to have your camera with you. And then you have to kind of know how to shoot that to get the exposure right. So good job. Really good job.
It's very, you know, I think a lot of people, when they first start taking pictures, they want to do pictures of sunsets. It's like that's the obvious thing. And it's always disappointing. Or not always. If you're, I guess as you get better, you might be able to capture a sunset. But it never looks, as to me, as good as it did in person.
Remind me next time. I'll give you a few sunset tips.
Yeah, there are. There's technique, I guess, in something like this. But what
a little bit, yeah.
Beautiful picture. Beautiful picture.
A little bit. And the third one by Tress Chapin is, it's kind of a, it's, I like the thought behind it, because it kind of really illustrates climate really well. It's a Santa Claus in a diving suit.
He's going scuba diving.
About to go scuba diving.
I don't know how he gets that dive watch over the fur cuff, but he's managed somehow to do that.
And at first I thought maybe that's in Australia, then it's kind of not really climate. It doesn't imply climate, but the subtitle says only in Florida. So I guess it's actually taken in Florida. So a Santa Claus going scuba diving, that certainly says something about the climate. Very strong colors, strong blue, strong red, strong green. So lots of primary colors in there. Makes the picture pop a lot. So pretty cool one. I like that.
Yeah, that's a good example of, you know, you're going to have a bright red from the Santa suit, but looking for the other colors and maybe a little post-processing to get that ocean green.
So. I guess
but, so. But that's okay, because it's the...
Well, maybe it was St. Patrick's Day and you never
maybe
know.
Maybe it was green. So the assignments we do every month with Chris Marquardt, it's really just an excuse to get out there and take pictures. And they don't have to be with a fancy camera by any means. Your camera phone's just fine. The key, though, if you're going to take a picture, by the way, that picture of the 747 flying over, Nikon D4S, this guy's obviously a pro with a very nice
lens.
And he
probably shot at 15 frames a second or something to make sure
first
he
mode.
Gets the right
shot. Yeah, very nicely done. But you don't have to have a Nikon D4. you can use any camera you've got. But the key is to tag it with the assignment's name. We're going to give that to you in a moment. And then upload it to Flickr, which is free. In fact, Flickr is a great place if you want to get some feedback on your photography. We have a Flickr group, pretty big one too now, thanks to everybody who's joined, called the Tech Guy Group. And that's where you'll need to submit your image. There are 4,000 images now in the Tech Guy group, and quite a few members. I think we're, what are we up to now?
11,000.
Wow, that's nice. So join the Tech Guy group. All of this is free. It's good to join just to look. Obviously, a lot of people are just looking because there's more people than pictures. But if you want to participate, maybe even get your picture reviewed on the radio, join that group and submit. What is our topic for this month?
The next assignment is Awake. I thought we'd do this because nature is coming back. We're almost having spring. Spring is kind of starting up here a bit. So everything's starting to awaken. So Awake.
Awake. Sleepers, awake. Exactly. We don't tell you what that means. We just let you figure it out and take a picture illustrating it. That's going to be a fun one. Awake. Could be a baby waking up. Could be a bud emerging from the ground. Could be a funeral. It could be anything. Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
Great to have you back. We'll see you again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was just talking to Chris Marquardt. He's doing a photo workshop in New York in October. Lisa and I are going to take that. I want to be a better photographer. And it's so much fun. It's such a great hobby. And he's just a great inspiration. You can find out more about Chris's workshops and what he's up to at discoverthetopfloor.com. Alex Camarillo, or Camarillo, I should say, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Leo.
Thanks for calling, Alex. What can I do for you?
I'm just wondering, I'm completely overhauling my old gaming rig. Right now I have an Intel i7. It's the third generation.
Oh, yeah. Every other generation you should upgrade.
Yeah. The only thing is that I'm wondering if I should switch over to AMD, because I've noticed there's a big price difference between generation.
Well, and there's another point, which is the desktop fifth generations aren't even out yet for Intel. So I would wait until Broadwell desktop comes out. That's the fifth generation. They've put them out for the laptops. They just came out. And the other thing that I probably should mention is that Broadwell is maybe 5% faster. It's not a lot faster. Intel does this kind of interesting tick-tock cycle on its processors. Every other generation, they speed it up in terms of its capabilities. Every other generation, then in the next generation after that, they do the TOC cycle, which is to reduce the process. So now they're down to 14 I don't know how much longer this is going to last, because they're now down to 14 billionths of a meter. And that means generally not faster, but lower power consumption, less heat dissipation. That might help in a gaming rig, because heating is always an issue. Now, should you choose AMD? Yeah, they're a lot less expensive. And I commend AMD, because if it weren't for AMD, we would not even have these Intel processors. AMD put the screws to Intel and said, we're going to make a better processor that's cheaper. They did, and Intel had to go to its Israeli skunk works and say, hey, because they were going down a very bad road. And fortunately, they had this little small division in Israel that was doing these core processors and saved Intel's bacon. However, having said that, and so kudos to AMD. We owe you. You've kept the prices down, the performance up. You've put the screws to Intel. You've made sure it's been competitive, because otherwise, without competition, probably Intel wouldn't be doing nothing. However, they didn't keep up. And so AMD's processors today are not anywhere near the quality, the performance of an Intel processor.
Okay.
So, yeah, you get AMD to save money. You do not get AMD as a gamer to eke out performance. So if the budget is a problem, then maybe look at AMD. They're not bad. They're just not. I don't think they're in the ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to kind of, I guess, future-proof my gaming rig right now, you know, so I don't have to upgrade for a while.
Look, I'm not the expert in this. We have a guy who does a show on our network called This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch. His name is Ryan Shroud. He does it with my old buddy, Patrick Norton. And Ryan runs a website that I highly recommend called PC Perspective, PCPER.com. And they review processors there. They will have the latest information. They'll let you know whether the AMDs are yet up to snuff, et cetera, et cetera. He also has, which I love, a hardware leaderboard in which they talk about what processor they would buy today for a budget machine, a medium machine, and a high-end gaming rig. So you could see what the best processors are. My suggestion is this is not yet time to buy a new Intel processor, because the fifth generation isn't out yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about the GPUs. I'm talking about the AMD CPUs, you understand. They bought ATI, and those are very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay? PCPER.com. I love those guys. Very, very sharp. And they help you if you want to build a computer, which is really, by the way, that's for hobbyists. That's for somebody who wants to learn, who wants to control every aspect of it, not for somebody who wants to save money. And definitely, because frankly, you're only buying one part. Dell buys a million parts. They're going to get a better deal than you. But also, the real disadvantage to building your own computer is the warranty. If something goes wrong with the computer you built, you're the guy who has to fix it. No one else. So I would suggest, for most of us, buying a computer pre-built is the best idea. But if you're a hobbyist, or you like to really control it, you really want to learn, and you don't mind being the last line of support, then building it's fun. Certainly is a lot of fun. And And then you have to solve things like, well, which processor should I get? And what graphics card is going to work best with that? And that's where PCPer is really a useful tool. Eric, Richmond, Virginia, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
I got a question about setting up. I got a bunch of DVDs, mostly James Bond, you know, the whole collection.
I got that 50-year collection, too. Awesome.
Oh, it's amazing.
Every James Bond movie ever. from Dr. No to Quantum of Solace, the whole kit and caboodle.
But thank God he let that never say never again. Well, and I'm trying to convert those to a media center on a desktop computer.
Yeah. Did you get the Blu-ray one?
What's that?
Did you get the Blu-ray version?
Well, I knew somebody that got it, so a friend
got the Blu-ray version. Well, I don't want to support piracy, but let me tell you something.
I do have the DVDs, though.
I get it. Okay. So ripping a DVD is different from ripping a Blu-ray. The movie industry blew it with DVD. They put a copy protection scheme on it so poor that it was cracked by a high school kid who has since been named DVD John within the first year of availability. So,
John Boy.
Yeah, DVD John, who is now no longer a high school kid. He's in his 30s. But DVD John cracked it, and there was no way for the movie industry to fix it, so DVDs forever were easy to copy.
Right.
Blu-ray, they said never again, so they have some better schemes for protecting, but guess what? The pirates always win. And there is a company called Slysoft, SLYSOFT.com, that makes Blu-ray ripping stuff. Now, I'm going to tell
you. I'm going for the DVD to
good.
Say.
Yeah, like, good, because you own the DVD. You should not.
Media center.
Yeah, console. That's fine. Not a problem. In fact, with a DVD, the easiest thing to do is go out and get Handbrake,
mm-hmm.
which is a free program. You'll also need VLC. They'll explain how to do it. VLC that's the one that will actually unencrypt the DVD, and then Handbrake will rip it. And you can rip it in any format you want, including the best format for media player. If you want whatever you want, and they'll let you rip it in any quality, up to obviously the. Remember, a DVD is an MPEG-2. It's not the highest quality anyway to begin with.
So it's
480p. It's 480p. It's not going to be any better than that. But it'll work fine with your media player. Just there's presets in Handbrake. It's great. Handbrake is HANDBRAKE, like a handbrake in a car. .fr. It's a French company, and they do a great job. They're a useful tool. Everybody should probably have that, just because you can make a version for an iPad, a version for an iPhone, a version for an Android phone, and a version all with the same software, and a version for your media player. And you can optimize it. But let me, a little speech here, and I'm glad you're doing the right thing, which is you're ripping DVDs you already bought. Please don't rip your friend's Blu-rays. He bought them, not you. You can rip them for him, but don't keep a copy for yourself. Technically, it is actually illegal to rip any DVD, even if you own it. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act makes it a crime to bypass copy protection. So even though the DVD copy protection was bypassed by a high school kid within months of its release and has been cracked ever since, it's just ethical. It's morally ethical to, even though technically illegal, it would be morally ethical to buy the DVD, and all you're doing is making it a different format for convenience. You're not giving it to friends. You're not putting it on BitTorrent sites. You're not giving it away. You're not burning discs and putting a blanket in your backyard and having people buy them. You're just doing it for personal use. I think ethically, that's acceptable. Legally, it may not, although I don't know of any case where anybody's been prosecuted for copying a DVD they own for personal purposes. I think that any court would say, you know, that's, he's not stealing. He's making another version so he can watch it easily on his iPad or his desktop. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. More of your calls to come. Hour number three just around the corner. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. I know there are people out there who are in the unenviable position of having to hire somebody for your business, whether you're in HR or just it's your business and that's your job. I've done it. We've all done it. And, you know, in one respect, it's easier in these modern times because we have the internet and there are lots of job boards out there. But, you know, each job board has its own kind of specialty, its own, where it's good and where it doesn't work so well. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just post to them all? Well, you can, and this is what we've started using, and we love. It's called ZipRecruiter.com. You could post to 50-plus job boards with one click of the mouse and to social networks like Twitter and Facebook. ZipRecruiter.com. I just love it. You don't have to worry about, is this the right job board or that one? You're gonna post your job to all the job sites. And with their premium traffic boost, you can get even up to three times more candidates. I think ZipRecruiter is the thing to do right now. I want you to visit ZipRecruiter.com. By the way, one of the nice things about ZipRecruiter, you are not going to get phone calls or emails filling your inbox because they have a great interface. All the candidates in any industry nationwide roll into your ZipRecruiter easy-to-use interface. You can rank them, rate them, hire that right person fast. I really like this. And with Traffic Boost, you can get up to three times more candidates, too. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by more than 200,000 businesses, including Twit. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free and get 30% off your first traffic boost by going to ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. If you've got a hiring to do, man, you gotta go to ZipRecruiter.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, smartphones, digital photography, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside those areas. You can use Skype out and reach us toll-free as well. 888-827-5536. Rules on drone flying. The Federal Aviation Administration is really challenged by this. Of course, you saw the recent news a few weeks back of the drone that was inadvertently flown over the White House fence and onto the White House grounds by, it turns out, a drunken employee of the government at 2 a.m. He was apparently in an apartment near the White House, and they got a little inebriated and decided, you know, it would be fun. It'd be fun to fly a drone off this balcony. Now, these drones, and really they're not, a drone isn't quite the right word. They're quadcopters. Became very popular a few years ago. A company called Parrot AR debuted a quadcopter that self-stabilized. It was actually pretty easy to fly because it could hover. If you didn't tell it what to do, it would just sit there kind of perfectly still. You used a smartphone, actually, in the case of the early Parrot AR drones, an iPhone or an iPad to control them. And then people put cameras on them, and man, you could get great shots because they're such rock-solid platforms with these four propellers. They made a great platform for an aerial camera. And a lot of the movie shots that had been done by helicopters, in fact, now today are done by drones. I was watching a documentary on the making of Game of Thrones, and a lot of Game of Thrones footage is now shot by drones, not by helicopters. So much cheaper. Realtors discovered drones. How a great way to show off a property. Aerial photography from very close up, 100 feet in the air. Really cool. Farmers are using it now to check out crops. They don't have to walk all the way out in the back 40, they can just send a drone out there, see how the corn's doing. But there are issues with drones, as you might have imagined, more than just flying them over the White House fence, although that's serious. The Major League Baseball, or was it football? I'm sorry, I think it was the NFL, during the playoffs, tried drone suppression devices at the stadia because they were worried, and I don't blame them about just kind of people flying drones over the football games, interfering with the network broadcast, violating copyright, and maybe, who knows? I mean, it doesn't take much of an imagination to think of how you might weaponize these and make them really a threat to public safety. Turned out it was so difficult to suppress the drones, they didn't use it for the Super Bowl. It was just... And this is really the biggest problem with drones is, how are you going to stop them? it's against the law to fly a drone in the national parks. The National Park Service, yeah, it ruins the quiet, the peace and quiet. You're sitting there, and yet I was talking to my hairdresser a couple months ago. She said, weirdest thing. She didn't know about drones yet. She said, weirdest thing. We're sitting around the campfire. I think it was a UFO. This thing flies in silent, zzz, stops, looks at us, hovers for a few seconds, then goes zzz, and flies away. And I said, no, that wasn't a UFO. It was a drone. And so some of the concerns are privacy concerns. The idea that a drone could be used to snoop on you. You're in your backyard sunbathing. You decide, hey, I don't need this bathing suit. No one can see me. Zzz, little drone flies over you. That's not so good. There's also the safety concern. Not merely that these drones would be used, you know, with weapons, but just that they could fall out of the sky on your head. Because one of the things I've learned in my short experience with drones, it's very easy to fly a drone outside of your area of control. Now, an expensive drone like the Parrot AR plans for this. The Parrot ARs have GPSs in them. And so they'll come back to you like a boomerang. If you lose control, they don't just fly off. But the cheap ones, and I had a cheap one, I pressed forward to fly it up in the air, and it was like I let go of a helium balloon. It just went straight up. Come back. Nope, bye. I don't know where it ended up. I hope it didn't land on somebody's head. Now, the drone I was using, a $40 SEMA drone, weighs 8 ounces, so I don't think it would hurt. Even if the blade hit you, it wouldn't hurt you, but because they're just flimsy plastic blades. But some of these bigger drones, oh, yeah, there's pretty hefty drones. And any drone that's carrying a decent camera, such as drones used in these TV shoots, that's a heavy heck of a load there. So the FAA has been grappling with this, and they at first issued kind of a temporary restriction on commercial use of drones, but they've started to back down a little bit because they understand that there is the realtors and farmers, for instance, really need these. Today, they issued a draft proposal. You're going to have 2 months to comment on it, although it could take as long as a year and a half for the FAA to analyze the comments. They obviously expect quite a few people to weigh in on this. The proposed rules from the FAA, which came out today, would allow drones weighing up to 55 pounds. Oh, boy. That's a small cow. To fly within sight of their remote pilots only during daylight hours. The aircraft must stay below 500 feet and fly at less than 100 miles an hour. So the fact that commercial drones could be bigger than 55 pounds, could fly out of the sight of their line of sight of their pilots, could travel at higher than 500 feet and more than 100 miles an hour, all of those things are true, but they're going to limit those. You have to be at least 17 years old to fly a drone, according to these. Again, these are proposed rules. You would have to pass an aeronautics test and be vetted by the Transportation Security Administration. But don't worry, says the FCC. The certificate wouldn't require the flight hours or medical rating of a private pilot's license. So, 60 days of public comment. They say we may take us a little longer to analyze that. By the way, today also the president signed an executive order about how federal agencies will use drones. Agencies must publish within 1 year how to access their policies about drones, particularly about collection, retention, and dissemination of information, so that the drones do not violate the First Amendment or discriminate against people based on ethnicity, race, gender, religion, or sexual orientation. The Commerce Department's National Telecommunications and Information Administration will begin developing a framework for privacy and transparency in the... All right, I'm going to point out a few things. First of all, the FAA, turns out, doesn't have an enforcement arm. There's no FAA police to come. So they can make rules. They can make a rule that, for instance, a 16-year-old can't fly a drone. How well observed do you think that's going to be? And furthermore, what's going to happen if a 16-year-old does fly a drone? The FAA police going to come to your door? No. I think drones are basically completely out of control. It is only a matter of time before someone's killed by one. We've already seen some pretty horrific drone accidents. But what I really worry about is drones used by terrorists. And maybe the secondary worry, because we've seen that Amazon and others are planning drone deliveries, is that the sky is just going to be full of these. Everywhere you go, there's going to be lawnmowers in the sky with spinning blades just above your head. We'll see. We'll see. I feel like drones have captured the public's imagination. People are buying them like crazy. We'll see. I have a feeling this is going to be a tough one to regulate. 8888 Ask Leo. I just know my experience with the drone, if it's probably pretty typical. I lost it immediately. Flight one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nathan Staten, our musical director, again with the perfect song. People say I'm fear-mongering with drones. Maybe I am. You know, we've had remote control planes for a long time, and no one's been hurt by those. I just feel like drones, there's something about drones. There's a lot of skill flying a remote control aircraft. A lot of skill. A drone attracts, I think, a different crowd because apparently it's easy to fly. But by the way, it's only apparently easy to fly. It's very easy to fly it in such a way that it's dangerous. It's interesting. The company that made the drone that was flown over the White House wall, DJI Phantom, which makes pricier and very nice drones. We use some of them ourselves here at the studio for aerial photography. And actually, we bought it. We used it once for aerial photography, and now John just plays with it, right? I think we've only used it once. They have a GPS built into their drone, so it will come home if you lose it. And they have now programmed with a firmware update all DJI Phantoms so they cannot fly in downtown Washington. They can't fly anywhere in downtown Washington, D.C. So you try it, and it just won't start up. So there you go. That's one solution. Self-policing. Mary in Corona, California. You've been patient. Thank you for holding on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Leo. Yeah, I just wanted to ask if you could help me with something. I'm taking care of someone that's physically challenged but has now turned to computers to keep himself busy. And I was wondering what program would be good to bring him up to date, because he used to study math, and you know, now he's limited to staying at home. And
does he have internet access?
Yes, he's looking at something called Pascal.
Oh, he wants to learn to computer program.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
If I could offer any additional programs that would...
Yeah, let me give you some suggestions. First of all, there's a great website, Khan Academy, K-A-H-N Academy. It's absolutely free. Salman Khan, the guy who started it, originally started it to help kids in high school with their homework. Ever since, it has exploded, and there are now, you can learn anything, and it's free. Thousands of courses, including computer programming and math and all sorts of stuff. It is an amazing resource. Thank you, Salman Khan, for creating it. It's brilliant. So this is a nice choice of it, because your friend can choose what he wants and study it in the areas of math, science, economics and finance, art and humanities, and yes, computing. Now, the problem with Pascal, it's kind of an out-of-date language. I don't know how many Pascal courses we're going to be able to find. But I would start at Khan Academy. Another great place to go. What kind of computer does he have?
He has a Windows 7 Toshiba.
Okay. If you have iTunes on it and can download iTunes, Apple has iTunes U, which is an amazing resource that allows you to get college courses from MIT and Stanford and Harvard and Yale for free in almost every subject. So I'm a big fan of iTunes U. Both iTunes U and Khan Academy are free. And if you browse the internet, you'll find courses in almost anything that you would want. Again, Pascal might be a little bit challenging, I would suggest he look at something more modern. A good learning language to start with is Python, like the snake. Problem with Pascal. Oh. I know Pascal. I learned it because that was in the earliest days of the Macintosh, how you had to program the Macintosh. It was a learning language created by a man named Niklas Wirth to teach people good programming habits. But it has not been widely used since the 80s, probably. So I would try something like Python, be more modern, Ruby. There are lots of places you can learn to code online. Code Academy. If that's what he wants to learn is computer programming, teaches courses in Python and PHP and Ruby, all the modern languages, for free, interactively, on the web, codeacademy.com.
Codeacademy.com.
Yeah. Okay. If that's what he wants to learn is computer programming, I'll tell you, there is no better time, frankly, to be what we call an autodidact, a self-learner, somebody who... If you have the motivation and the interest and the patience and probably the ambition or the persistence to learn by yourself without somebody cracking the whip or teaching you, there has never been a better time. The amount and variety of courseware online is mind-boggling. I'm just giving you three that you could spend the rest of your life learning from. Of course, there are many paid services like our sponsor, lynda.com. But given that he's probably on disability, free is probably a better choice. Code Academy, keep him busy for a long time. I think this is a wonderful time to learn something. You could, if you were a kid that had access to even a tablet and the internet, you could take college courses to your heart's content from the best universities in the world for free. For free. MIT puts all of its courses, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, puts all of its courses online for free. It's called the Open Courseware Initiative. And it's not just the lectures. It's the materials. It's the tests. It's everything. You could literally get a free college education if you have the base technology, which is a computer and the internet. So there's three good starting points. Khan Academy, Code Academy, and iTunes U, but the sky's the limit. There's no limit at all. Really, really think this is a great thing to get into. And man, if you're a 16-year-old today, the only thing holding you back is your own initiative, your own desire. Because if you want it, you can get it. Nobody's going to stop you. Michael, New York City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great, Michael. How are you?
Good, thanks. You know, it's funny in this day and age of we're wondering who's listening on the phone. I momentarily got caught with my vocal pants down when Chris Marquardt was talking about the new project and, you know, Wach auf. Immediately, you know, Wach et auf, ruft uns die Stimme, and I'm singing that over my head. I can't get it out of my head.
I don't know what that is, and I hope it's okay.
Oh, it's awake. The voice is called. That's what it, you know, he's talking about taking pictures. Spring is coming, so Wach auf means awake, and it's
awake.
The old Bach him, you know, awake, the voice is calling.
I bet you that's why he used the word awake. It's probably, you know, he's German, it's in his blood.
You know, I was a opera singer in a different life, so that stuff never leaves your head.
I love that stuff. Love it.
My question for you is, it's a TV question and specifically an over-the-air antenna question. I have a television that has only one HDMI port. So to solve the problem I have of having multiple devices, I have a receiver that has a television to the receiver, and then it's got four other channels. So I've got a Blu-ray, Roku, and then I've got Chromecast on the other one. So I have one open. And I found...
Would you hang on? Do a little more leader for me while we hang on. We'll be back after the break, and I'll continue the question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We started the call, but didn't get to the question. Michael in New York City. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Leo.
You had a great solution, by the way, in New York City, but the Supreme Court put him out of business.
I did. Aereo. I was an Aereo customer, and I slowly watched it die on the vine.
That's
and
so
then
sad.
Realized, yeah.
So sad.
But in speaking to some neighbors, they've discovered an antenna that seems to work for them, and But it seems to me, as I said, with my limited, I've got one HDMI port in the TV that goes into a receiver that acts as a switcher, essentially, among different devices.
Yeah.
It seems to me that all I can do is plug the antenna into the cable, coaxial cable jack in the television, and then switch back to the television input and turn up the sound on TV.
So well, the truth is now nobody does analog over the air anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a digital box that the antenna plugs into, and I bet you, I don't know, I wonder if that has HDMI out or not.
Well, this is like a basic over-the-air, one of those things where you just plug it directly, unless I were to upgrade maybe to, is there a device out there that will give me some type of box then that has an HDMI? Because what I'm looking at and what I've seen people have is just, it's like a, you know, it looks like a piece of paper essentially, and it's got the cable and it just goes into the TV. And that's the limit of it. There's no other type of hardware associated, because I don't have cable.
Yeah.
So my problem.
Yeah, no, I understand. So the signals have all, the broadcast signals used to be analog. And that's what your TV, that thing is expecting, unless it's a, no, that's what it's expecting over that cable thing, is an analog signal. So what you will have is an antenna that will go into something that's going to turn it into the signal that your TV can see. I would guess that you could also use, that there would be boxes that would have antennas hooked up to them that would have HDMI out.
Okay, maybe I can explore that. So then
that's what you want, right? You want HDMI out.
Yeah, because I've got that extra channel, so I can keep using that as the switcher between my different devices and then take advantage of the 5.1 channel that the digital that HDTV provides.
Right. I would say, I don't know, because I don't live in an area where we can get over the air, so I've never essayed this. Let me ask the chat room I'm sure there are people in the chat room who do this. He wants his antenna to go to an HDMI cable so he can plug it into the back of his AV receiver, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
Is that a tuner, though? Doesn't there have to be a tuner somehow built into it?
You're right. There would be, wouldn't there? Because that signal would be one channel, so you'd have to tune it.
I mean, most of the antennas I see over the bait, like, kind of, unless you're going to go nuts, most of the over-the-air antennas really are just coax right into the TV.
No, you're right, and the TV will accept that and do the conversion. Yeah,
yeah.
So actually, the OTA cable on your TV, if it's a modern TV, I presume it is, would automatically do that conversion.
Yeah, and again, the other problem I have is I don't have a. I wouldn't mind doing that, but there's no digital out from the TV. So even theoretically, I wouldn't mind switching over to the television and then having digital out into the receiver as opposed to HDMI, and I just have to make that one input switch. But right now, it seems like I can't take advantage of the 5.1 at all.
Yeah, if you get digital out of the TV, the SPDIF, they call it.
I don't have that. That's the problem.
You don't have that. Yeah, because that's how you would do it.
Yeah, the TV looks good, but it's not too advanced.
Got it.
It was a gift, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a screen. It's a panel, really. Yeah. So that's how you would do it on a TV that had digital out. You just put that into your tuner, and I bet it'd be the only digital audio thing anyway, and that would handle it.
I mean, there's probably, you know, RCA out, but then what's
and there's also going to be lip sync issues. So
if somebody knows of a good HDMI antenna that has HDMI,
it would have to have, as you say, it would have to have a tuner, so you'd have a separate remote that would tell you what channel. Mediasonic, the Homeworks, takes over the air to HDMI, but it would have to have a tuner in the, you'd be buying an extra tuner, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's like I'm back to just Netflix and Hulu.
Let's think about this. Yeah, and if you want 5.1, that's right. The picture, by the way, on over the air HD, that's the best picture you're getting. It's better than anything you're going to get on.
I mean, I've had antennas that'll get like one or two channels, but they don't. They've been kind of so. But there are some that, again, a couple neighbors of mine have. You know, being like in the middle of a 12-story building in Manhattan on the Upper West Side,
right?
You don't always get the best.
Check to see if your TV. I'm thinking it doesn't have this, but check to see if that HDMI has ARC, audio return channel, ARC.
It does.
You're golden.
So they have a different name for it on the LG TV. It's just, I forget, like Simple Link or something like that.
I know. Samsung does the same thing. They relabel it. That sends audio back. So it's getting the digital signal over the air into the TV, and then it's the same thing as the SPDIF would be. It sends digital audio back through ARC. So you just have to set it up so that your receiver gets the ARC and starts playing it through your 5.1. If you've got ARC, you're good.
Okay. All right.
Well, you got everything you need. You're just going to have to figure out what settings on the TV and the AV receiver to get so that the arc is coming into the you know, when I turn on my TV and I switch it to something that has arc, the receiver goes, "Oh, I got arc." And we'll start broadcasting that audio regardless of how I set it.
Yeah. And so, I've got a Harmony remote, so it's kind of that process of, you know, turning on
the receiver, if you set it up properly, should recognize there's return audio coming from the TV and play it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And as
you're Mark
once said, Bach auf.
Bach auf. I want one more, a little more Bach.
Ja, weg da sehr hoch auf der Zine.
That's beautiful.
Auf du Stadt Jerusalem.
Beautiful. Do you still sing at all?
I do. Occasional gigs around the city, church jobs.
It's gorgeous.
And, you know, and then if I can get out of town. So
it's gorgeous.
Thank well, you helped me many years ago with a podcast that's opera-related. So,
I remember that. You still doing it?
Yeah, Opera Now. We've off and on for 8 years.
What's the name of it? Where can we find it?
Sure. It's operanowpodcast.com.
Beautiful.
Michael, we picked up many listeners years ago from when I made that call.
OperaNowPodcast.com. I'm going to be listening.
The late night look at the opera business, so to speak.
Ooh.
Very casual, open to, well, not late night, but we open it up. It's for people who are experienced, people who are not. We try to just translate it into a way that everybody can love and appreciate it. Opera people, they put their pants on one leg at a time like anybody else.
You know, we went to see the San Francisco Opera, did Traviata a couple of months ago, and they did something I've never seen an opera do, and I loved it. They left the curtain open during the scene change.
And the
director came out and explained what was going on. And I'll tell you, talk about a good way to raise money for the opera. When you see 40 stagehands moving massive pieces of scenery in, you know, 15 minutes, you really get a sense of why it's so expensive to put on an opera.
Yeah. Well, my wife is actually in San Francisco with a company called Opera Parallel.
Oh.
She's doing a production of Dead Man Walking.
Wow.
The Sister Helen Prejean.
Yeah.
The film with Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon. And there's Jake Heggie is the composer.
Oh, interesting.
It's been very popular over the last 13 years, and this is her second production. So
I'll look for it. That's great. Thanks for the tip.
Opera Parallel is the name of the company.
Opera Parallel. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Appreciate the time, Leo.
I appreciate your singing. Doug in Overland, Missouri. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I travel all over the country. I'm not a truck driver or anything, but I was wondering if there's a program for Windows that will automatically update the time zone that I'm in on the system clock.
It's supposed to do it automatically.
I got a Windows 8.1 computer. It's never done it.
Maybe I'm wrong. You know, when Apple started doing this, I thought it was such a great thing. They automatically detect where you are based on your IP address, I guess.
Well, and Facebook and Google does that.
Huh. You know what? I'm going to put you on hold because we have to take a break and see if I can figure out. I bet you there's a way to do it in Windows. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Turns out, I guess, and this is surprising to me because it would be such a simple thing for Windows to do. Windows does not notice or attempt to figure out where you are, and so as a result does not reset your time. Maybe people would find that annoying, but I like that feature. And in fact, it's a feature Apple does provide on OS X. You have to turn it on, but they ask you when you first install OS X, do you want me to follow, geolocate you and adjust the time? There are third-party programs that will do that. So I guess what I could do is put a list of those third-party programs. I found a website, Stack Exchange is a well-known programmer's website. Guy asked this question on Stack Exchange: how can I automatically change the time based on current location? And there were a number of – because it's a programmer's website, this is kind of cool. Somebody just wrote a program to do it. So there's one thing you can do. It's from a site called Godot and Company, G-O-D-O-T and A-N-D-C-O. And the program is called Time Traveler. There's a 30-day trial, although I think it's a little expensive. It's $12 per computer if you wanted to buy this outright. But this would do it. It's a Windows application that automatically updates the time on your PC wherever you travel. You don't need a GPS module, special hardware, a personal chant, they say, or secret handshake. as soon as you're connected to the internet, it will, and this is something that's easy to do, detect it. I'm going to put a link to this Stack Exchange thread, though, because there's other ways to do it. Somebody wrote a PowerShell script that would do it in Windows. You just have to run that PowerShell script automatically. Somebody else wrote a batch file using the tzutil command line utility, which comes with Windows 7. You could set the time zone that way. So there are a lot of solutions. I'll tell you what, I'm going to copy this link and send it to James DeRuvo, who does our show notes, and we'll put it in the website. This is where the website really can be handy. Just to techguylabs.com, and you'll find your answer there. And then, if you have another solution, you can add it by via the comments. Techguylabs.com. Superuser.com is where we got the answer. We'll put that in the show notes. Claudia, North Edwards, California. Hi, Claudia.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
You have a very interesting show on the telephone.
It's odd, isn't it? It's even better, by the way. It's even better on the telephone than it is on the radio because, well, you know why. You heard it.
Yes, and I love that video you played with the drones.
Yeah, well, we were talking about drones, and somebody in the chat room said, oh, Leo, you're just you're being overdramatic. Drones are not harmful. So I thought I would show this YouTube video of some kids who attached Roman candles. You know, those are the fireworks that shoot fireworks in the sky. Attached Roman candles to a drone and then got their kid brother to put on a football helmet and run around in a field while they shot at him from the air.
Well, that kid that was being shot at said the S word.
Oh, well, I don't blame him. Would you?
I
wouldn't blame him one bit. Anyway, I apologize for the phone profanity.
I sat here just laughing my head off.
Well, you're very kind, Claudia. That's why we make, by the way, we do make a podcast that includes the behind-the-scenes footage.
Mm-hmm.
You can get that at twit.tv or at techguylabs.com if you want.
Well, if ever I get my computer back, I'll...
Oh, no. What happened? What happened?
I had it in my briefcase as a laptop, and I was coming back from somewhere, and I set it, the briefcase, very carefully on the porch, and the dog came over and knocked it over, and the screen broke.
Oh, rats.
And it would cost more to get a new screen than it would a new computer.
Well, you know, you could buy a external monitor. Many laptops have an external display port.
For the laptop.
Yeah. Just look on the laptop. You may see a monitor connection. It might be mini display port or VGA. You could just buy a monitor that takes that kind of input. And then it'd be a little ungainly. You'd be using the desktop monitor with your laptop, but at least you could still
use it. Well, I use it mostly at home anyway, but I bought it for travel. But anyhow, my question, I don't want to take up all your time. I'm a notary.
Okay.
And I sometimes do long-distance notaries. And the companies want to be able to send me new paperwork for the next signer I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I need a computer, small laptop computer, and a printer that will work off the cigarette lighter in the car.
Oh, how cool. So you'd be a mobile notary.
Yes, completely. Because right now I have to, if I had a computer that would work off the plug-in, I could use one of those plug-in things that go into the computer that record things.
Yeah.
And I can't think of the name of it right now. Excuse me.
So anyway, Epson, our sponsor, I should
go into a place like Staples or
somewhere,
Kinko's or something, to get it printed out.
No, bring your own printer.
Yeah, if I had my own printer, I could do everything right there in the car. And I could go to one of the places that has the free Wi-Fi.
Yep.
And I could have the internet that I need off of them.
Yeah, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
But
I need to know, is there something special I need in a computer or something special I need in a printer?
No. So first of all, there are mobile printers out there. There's quite a few of them. Our sponsor Epson makes some. HP makes some. Quite a few companies. And they're tiny little things. And you can buy an inverter that will plug into your cigarette lighter and actually give it the capability of plugging anything into it, including your laptop and your printer with a standard plug.
An inverter?
Yeah, it's called an inverter.
Inverter.
Yeah. And it would easily be able to power a, you don't want to kill your battery, so you don't want to power too big of a circuit, but you could easily power a printer. They don't draw a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And
I thought if I had the computer, I could go somewhere and record that, and then I would have the printer right there to print off.
They also have battery-powered printers. You could use those as well.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. These mobile printers work quite well, actually. The key is they're small. But you don't need something big, right? You're going to print one page at a time.
Yeah.
You're not printing War and Peace.
It takes me longer than having a big printer somewhere, right. But that's all right.
You know, we get this call a lot from contractors and others, people who want to do contracts in the field and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely.
Well, basically, that's what I'm doing is home contracts for buying homes.
Ah, perfect.
And so then I could print up what I needed and take it into the new customer and have whatever I needed.
I bet you could even go into Staples or somewhere and say, I need a mobile printer. They probably would have battery-powered printers, but there are quite a few of them. There are also printers that you would power off the laptop, which is kind of cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A printer doesn't require a lot of power, but I'll recommend the Epson one since they're a sponsor. It's the Workforce WF-100.
WF-100.
And interestingly, they show it in a car printing.
Oh.
The world's lightest and smallest mobile printer, Epson says, and it really is pretty tiny. I'm guessing battery powered, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you can charge it via USB if you wish off your laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always buy an inverter that would go in the car and power.
USB was the word I was trying to think of.
USB, the magic. Yeah, it's got a lithium-ion battery just like your laptop.
Uh-huh.
So truthfully, you probably have easy enough. You just every night you charge your battery in your laptop and your printer, and now you're on the road.
Now, what kind of a thing did you say I needed for them?
I don't think you'd need this, but you can get
computer.
It's called an inverter.
Inverter.
And, you know, you can go any auto supply store will have them or online, and it basically turns...
That's kind of like what you need for a mobile home.
Yeah. Cigarette lighter is 12 volts DC.
Mm-hmm.
It has to invert it to turn it into AC, and then you have an AC plug on the other end. Again, you want to keep the motor running because you don't want to kill your battery, but...
Right.
And truthfully, depends on how much you're doing, but the battery life in the laptop and printer may be more than adequate. You may never need the inverter.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
And you had said something when we first started about the my busted computer.
Yeah. So you can go out and get a monitor, like a desktop monitor, that'll plug into that laptop. You know what I would do is bring your laptop to a computer store or a Staples or somewhere, and they can look at it and see what kind of video out it will have. They'll see the right kind of plug, and they can get you a monitor that you just plug right into it. You'll use the keyboard and mouse, if you wish, of your laptop, or you can get a USB keyboard and mouse. Your laptop becomes the kind of what we call the CPU, the processor, and you have now it's become a desktop computer, but you've got a keyboard, mouse, and monitor.
Right now, if I had a desktop computer, it would help.
So
that gives me something to look for. So
there you go.
I thank you, sir, for all your information.
I thank you for listening. For the amusement.
For the entertainment.
The foul language amusement in the interstitials. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.